The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. You've got exactly 8 years. That's 8 summers. That's 8 of your most favorite holidays. That's 8 more trips, perhaps, for a vacation. That's just exactly 8 years. And by that time, according to the combined opinion of everybody who is anybody in the field of human population, most of this world will be suffering the greatest famine in all of history. And according to those same experts, millions are destined to die in 1975 and the years that follow. And they say there is no way to stop it. Now, nearly all of your news today is bad. Most of it is a sort of a grisly, inhuman collection of atrocities, of incredible butchery, of animalistic bestiality, of the threat of more violence. And incredibly enough, in the midst of these giant and incomprehensible worldwide problems that threaten to come crushing in upon us and threaten the very survival of all mankind, most people, it seems, are concerned more with me, my, and I. They're concerned about their own personal liberties. They're concerned about their own personal stomachs and their own personal sight and sound and sense of touch. They're concerned about their own private sort of empirical experience in life. They're concerned about this and that little issue. They're angry. They're upset. They're unsettled. They're nettled. They're unhappy. They're frustrated. They're confused. They want more. We see this and that movement. A person wants to ram through this or that legislation to protect his children. Somebody else says, by way of virtual, you would think, blackmail, that what you federal people have got to do to these cities is to give us buckets full and bushels full of money right now or else we're going to riot this summer. And they tell you, well, we got to build bigger parks and bigger playgrounds. We got to keep these kids off the street. Nobody ever seems to turn around to think, why don't they tell the parents to do something about it? And maybe you legislate that they call the parents on the carpet when the parents don't handle the kids. Today, the schools get them at age 6, and the police sort of start watching after them at age 12, and the rest of society's got a giant headache by the time they're 19 and already trying to reform from their binge on dope. But the amazing thing is that it seems the average person sinks down into his own little rut. You can just barely see this guy's ears projecting above the depth of this rut into which he's gotten himself, walking to and fro in his job and his daily experience, all wrapped up in, concerned about, and sometimes glandularly and emotionally involved in his own personal problems. Meanwhile, he doesn't even admit that the world is in the kind of shape it is. He doesn't even know about the population explosion and its true perspective and its true meaning. He denies that the giant divisive problems, the proliferation of nuclear weapons, the attempt to control weapons in space, the threat of world communism and the almost death-like last moment, last-ditch effort of the United States to contain it. All of these problems of the Jew-Arab strife and Yemen and Aden and Suez and the threat of losing Gibraltar and Panama and divided Berlin and all these other things, people just forget about that. And today you see people that are so excited, their veins are distended, they're sort of insane with their feelings of hostility and anger over this and that little local or private consideration. Well, it's about time in the midst of all of our arguments and all of our threats of violence and all of the preoccupation with violence and the almost insatiable desire of humankind to see more violence, this rabid sort of a drift into anarchy of ours in the Western world where people like to blot out of their minds the reality of the way the rest of this world is, it's about time you began to realize that today, 12,000 people starved to death. But while those 12,000 people starved to death, there were two more. Then for every one who died, there were two who were born. And that regardless as to the fantastic specter of worldwide starvation, that the population explosion is still going on. I know the average person says, what do you mean explosion? It takes years to grow a family and all of that. I had a letter from one man in the northeastern part of the United States who said that he didn't see any population explosion. He said we got all kinds of room up here. Apparently, he thought I meant stacking people like so many sardines in a can. But the facts are, as I've reported time and again on the World Tomorrow program, there is only 15% of the entirety of the land surface that is lived upon, that is inhabitable. And there is only 7 7/10% of it that is arable or tillable or cultivatable, upon which you can grow crops. And that Dr. Raymond Ewell, who is vice president at the State University of New York in Buffalo, said that the world is running out of space. The world is running out of food. The world is running out of fresh, drinkable water. And the world is running out of fresh air that is fit for breathing in many areas. And the increasing population is not only a part of the problem, but the increasing population density and the shifting of population from underdeveloped and uncrowded areas into the big, growing, sprawling, festering sores we call cities. The giant, enervating asphalt jungles of crime, of pornography, and illicit sex that we called megalopolis of today, that these problems are through the pressure of people causing many social problems of steadily increasing magnitude. Our riots get bigger. They get oftener. They get more destructive. They get more frightening. This, said Dr. Ewell, is the biggest, most fundamental, and most nearly insoluble problem that has ever faced the human race. Is that a frightening statistic? Is that shocking? Well, that's only the beginning. Now, I've got some good news out of all of it that you probably haven't heard before, and it's about time you heard there are some solutions, and the average person doesn't want to look at the news the way it is because he's afraid there aren't any solutions, and because he's pretty well convinced there isn't any way out of it. And I think the average person is sort of playing a little game with himself. He's all excited about his personal liberties. Maybe you're a Negro person in the United States. And if you are, you may be very, very much concerned about the civil rights movement. Perhaps you should be. Are you also concerned about the rest of the population of the earth? Because regardless as to how well you would like to blot it out of your mind and how thoroughly you would like to forget it, you are going to be concerned because you will be unable to keep yourself uninvolved. We are involved, whether we're white, yellow, brown, purple, splotched, or polka-dotted, with all of our problems involving we want to get our freedoms or our liberties or this or that. Or the person who wants to deny somebody else's freedoms or his liberties, and the things which excite and which stimulate people's imagination and get their juices to flowing and their glands to going and get them all excited and they want to riot and burn somebody's home down because they think that somebody else was bothered by perhaps some other atrocity. It's about time you began to realize the overall magnitude of the problems that confront all of humankind. And it's about time you began to realize that regardless as to whether you were all the same color, regardless as to whether every problem was solved, I mean regardless as to whether every individual had an exact equal income, if we were all a sort of an equal olive drab, the exact same color, if we were all the same height, if we were all the same shape, if we were all the same weight, if we had the same color of eyes and texture of hair, if every human being spoke the same language, if we all worshipped in the same church, if we all saluted the same flag, if every last one of us voted for the same president, this world would be headed for the biggest, most imagination-defying, destructive global war that you could ever imagine, and within about 8 years from today. That's the proportion of the population explosion. Do you think you can ignore that one? Well, it's not going to ignore you. You might think you can escape from it, but it's going to dog your heels. Now, I'm not trying to scare you beyond just getting you to think a little bit, because I have a booklet for you that shows you the population explosion in perspective and shows you what the solution to it is. Shows you there is a way out, but you're not going to find the way out by denying the condition exists. When you hear some of the incredible methods that some people are proposing to solve the population explosion, it's enough to stand your hair on end. Now, in a recent book that has been getting quite a few reviews and a lot of explosive comments have been made about it, shocking ideas are set forth in it, but it It seeks to analyze and to put in perspective this massive onslaught of populations. The population explosion. Now, first, before I give you a few of these proposed solutions, which are not really solutions at all, and they're quite unacceptable, as you're going to see, what do you mean, population explosion? Just what is the population explosion? Well, perhaps we ought to put it this way. There are 70 million people being added to the population of the Earth every single year. Within 15 years, the population of this world will have absolutely doubled. Maybe there is another way to put it. Every single year, just to give you a few stats on it so you sort of get the perspective, I've talked about it before. I've mentioned the population explosion on the World Tomorrow time and time again, and very few people are paying very much attention to it, but a lot of people are. They're getting their minds open, and they're wondering, is there a solution? Is there a way out? And I'd like to hear some of that good news, they say. So they write for this booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. They are willing, they're unusual people, they're willing to admit the world is in pretty bad shape, but they're not willing to throw up their hands and quit. They are willing to hear the good news. So, to get your finger on the pulse of the world population statistics for a moment, realize that every single year, the increase alone in the nation of India is more than the total present population of the nation of Australia. Now, you people listening in Adelaide, or in Launceston, or in Hobart, or maybe in Kalgoorlie, or Perth, or up in Brisbane, or in Sydney, or Melbourne, wherever you live in Australia, and you can hear it wherever you live there, with the possible exception of Alice Springs, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to you that every single year in a nation that is absolutely in ferment, a nation where the government only barely by force of police and arms is keeping down the massive avalanche of the muttering voice of millions of people who are on the verge of massive starvation, that in that nation where that starvation threatens, every single year, enough more babies are born to more than make up the total population of the nation of Australia. Believe it or not, that has quite serious import to you people in Australia and to the rest of the world. One quarter of the human race lives in China, and China is experiencing an exploding population. People say, well, what do you mean explosion? It takes a long time to rear a family. It takes a long time to have a baby. All right, well, let's just hear about what the population explosion consists of for a moment then. You see, it's a matter of the number of mouths and the number of acres, the number of pieces of meat and the fruits and the vegetables and the nuts and all the rest of it that it takes to feed those people. Now, let's put it this way. This is a documented statistic. It has now been 9 years since there has been any appreciable increase in the food production for the total world with all of its usable acreage. 9 years. Now, in those 9 years, at the rate of approximately, and it's varied little by little, but it's within a million or so, 70 million a year have been added. That's about 630 million more people have been added to the earth in that 9 years' time. 630 million in 9 years. That's more than the present population of India. Now, can you even begin to imagine that this continues on and on and on, that there is no place to stop it? The world didn't reach its first billion people in modern history, at least, until 1850. It only took it another 80 years. Now, from all recorded history, so far as men admit, and there is a part of history they don't admit, a great world cataclysm that wiped out the population of the earth that they don't admit, but so far as what is admissible or admitted in world history, the first billion was not reached until 1850, but it only took another 80 years until 1930 before there were 2 billion people on Earth. But then it was only another 30 years before there were 3 billion. But then, and that brings us to 1960, the statisticians tell us that we can have that time. And in 15 years, the next billion will be reached. Then you can probably have that time. And another billion, and then you can half that in a billion, and then half that in a billion, and then finally you'll have 5 billion a year. Then the next year, 20 billion. The next year after that, you'll have 65 billion. The curve bends over backward and it's absolutely insoluble. This world is predicted to reach 6 billion or double the present population and then some. By the year 2000. By the year 2035, in only 35 short years after that, it would double to 12 billion. By the year 2070, you won't be alive then, so maybe you could save a lot of people. Well, why should I worry about that? Well, of course, the trouble is a lot of people are saying, why should I worry about 1969? Well, why should I worry about next March or April, as far as that's concerned? Most people are saying, why worry about the winter? Summer's here. That's the way people approach the problems of the world today. But by 2070, it's estimated by present growth rates and taking all things into consideration that the Earth's population would be over 25 billion. And that, incidentally, is assuming that birth rates don't increase. Now, what does that mean? Well, trying to find what that means is kind of a perplexing problem all by itself. People in hunger categories, if you took all people who are hungry, whose stomachs are aching with want of food, if they stood single file, 2 feet apart, with room there to move around a little bit, they would circle the globe 25 times. Hungry people, standing 2 feet apart, single file, you would have a line that goes around the entirety of the globe 25 times. You, in comfortable, overfed, overstuffed, and often it's been called overnourished and underfed, if you get the meaning of that, America, and to a great extent Britain, and to a great extent Western Europe, the democracies of Northwestern Europe, of Germany and of the Netherlands and even of France to a large percentage, but especially people still to a great extent in Canada, in South Africa and Australia, are probably throwing into your garbage can a better proportion of food per day than the average Mr. and Mrs. World has ever seen in their entire life. Now, how about dividing up all the food of the world? Isn't that possible? Couldn't we take care of it by, like we tried to do with India recently, by this giant food armada that we were sending over there that I commented on time and time again, 600 ships taking I don't know how many millions of tons of grain until the government bins and all the private bins that were storing the government surpluses in the United States were virtually drained, and now we find ourselves on the threshold of national drought and famine. And about 50% of all of that grain was destroyed by insects, by rodents, by poor storage methods, or maybe found its way into a black market outlet, who knows. But if we tried to divide it all up, we're sort of like Peter and the Dyke. Only a tiny little handful of nations, the United States, Canada, and Australia among them, are able to overproduce. That is, to produce more food than they themselves can use, and that is rapidly changing today, incidentally. And they are trying frantically to stave off the hunger pangs for the rest of the world. But if all the food of the world, including all surplus stores, which incidentally are rapidly disappearing, were distributed equally, and each human being received identical quantities, then every human being on the face of this earth today would live on the starvation level and would be malnourished. If you want a quote from that, it's Dr. George Borgstrom of the Michigan State University's Department of Food Science. Now, trying to appraise the population explosion is almost impossible. I know that. But in this one leading book that I told you I was going to comment about, some of the most bizarre predictions for the solution of it have been presented, and of course it's elicited a great deal of rather violent response. Because it simply said there is no way to prevent a giant famine in which millions are destined to die in 1975 and the years that follow, and you cannot depend on science. No, you can't. You can't depend upon food farms. You can't depend upon algae in the sea. You can't depend upon all the glorious predictions that cartoonists and comic strip drawers and all the rest of them are putting in your science sections of the newspaper. And the average layman sees some cartoonist talk about great fish farms in the sea. He thinks, oh, fine. Maybe my kid will be age 17 and will never have seen a banana, but at least he'll be alive eating algae, living on sardines. You've seen that, haven't you? I have. It's been in the Sunday newspapers. This is what science claims it's going to do for you. Listen, this book says, and it's absolutely documented, that birth control, one great method, and they're talking about abortions, and they're talking about trying to get rid of a potentially malformed or a thalidomide baby before birth and are talking about birth control through abortions and so on and a great furor in the church and a great religious issue, a great racial issue, a great political issue in many countries is birth control. But now listen, let's take it all. None of it is going to work. Birth control won't save us. New farming methods aren't going to work. Synthetic foods won't work. Food reforms won't work. Nourishment from under the sea won't work because every last bit of it is going to be labeled entirely too little and entirely too late. It would have had to have been started in the 1930s. These programs would have had to have gotten started back in the 40s. They would have to be well underway, and they would have to be ready to be put into exact effect throughout the entirety of the world right now today. But that means changing the world's religions. It means educating the vast teeming masses of Africa, of Central and South America, of Asia. It means increasing the hygiene. It means cleaning up the world's food and water supply. It means urging them to give up tribal taboos, superstitions, and religions that are against their controlling of the size of their family. So, said the book, there is no question that mass wipeout by starvation is coming. A sort of a lemming-like plunge to the sea. The only answerable questions are these, said the book. Which peoples will starve, and which peoples will be allowed to survive? The United States, called the most powerful of the granary nations of the world, will have to make these ruthless decisions, said the book. Now think about this in perspective. What kind of a solution is this? Now this book has been analyzed by congressmen, by clergymen. It's had the look of a variable literary alarm with worldwide repercussions. The authors William and Paul Paddock warn of the inevitable time of this famine. They offer some deeply troubling plans for saving certain masses of humanity. Here's what you're faced with. They said the practice of triage be put into effect. That this would be a potential solution. Now, that's a term that is used in military medicine. It's defined as the assigning of priority to treatment of the wounded brought to a battlefield hospital in a time of mass casualties and limited medical facilities, and whether the medics ought to bring them all or a part of them, whether you can escape with them under the assault of enemy weapons, and whether your helicopters can get them all out, and so on. So they divide the wounded into three classifications, and here they are. One, those who are so seriously wounded that they cannot survive regardless of treatment. They call these the can't be saved category. Two, those who can survive without treatment regardless of the pain they're suffering, and they call these the walking wounded. And then three, those who can be saved by immediate medical care. Now they take this principle in this book and apply it to world nations that are right now on the verge of massive, multiple hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, dying in starvation. And they present their own sample opinions that, for example, since they say Haiti, Egypt, and India absorb like a blotter about 25% of the entire American wheat crop alone, would be listed as the can't-be-saved nations, and American statisticians, politicians, statesmen, diplomats, what have you, would simply write off these nations. They would simply say, these nations must go. This is exactly what they say is the only potential solution for it. And that then they would list as can't be saved those nations, and they would say, well, Gambia, Libya, nations like this are among the so-called walking wounded, so we will give them a little wheat. And they would say, well, Tunisia and Pakistan, now they should receive food. Can you begin to imagine what would occur? Here are the two divided Pakistans, east and west, of the Muslim religion. Then here is India in between of the Hindu religion. And those nations divided over religious belief. And the United States would withhold food from one while sending it to the other? Oh, your mind can't begin to imagine the worldwide problems in such an eventuality. The question I ask you is, can you afford to sit in your living room and pull your shades and lock your door and pretend the world isn't out there? Can you afford to deny these problems? Can you afford to think that this world and the United States likes to bamboozle itself into believing it is going to be able to deny the agonizing cry of millions of people about to starve to death? Do you think for one moment that 6% of the population of this earth can continue to wallow around in 50% of its wealth, all the while with its own riots and mounting crime and growing divorce and its growing anarchy and chaos, its growing violence and a preoccupation, a regular obsession with violence in television and its entertainment and on motion picture screens? Do you think for one moment this overfed, overglutted, overstuffed, great big sick giant of the United States can continue with its giant riots, its incredible attitude toward the rest of the world, and promise itself an ever more dizzying array of glamorous playthings while it denies the agonizing cries of the millions of human beings who even at this moment are dying of starvation? Don't kid yourself, my friends. We can't get away with it. It's going to come pressing in on us regardless as to what we may think. And what you may not realize is it is all predicted. There is a definite step-by-step pattern of events that shows you exactly what will take place in the future. And the big nations of this world are identified in all places. In the Bible, in the pages of Bible prophecy, the big powers are mentioned step-by-step. And there is a great plan, a great purpose that is being worked out, and all of this fits into an overall pattern. And the Bible admitted years ago that this world would be entering the exact conditions that it is entering and that it is already into right now today. Now when Dr. Raymond Ewell, who is a former advisor to the government of India, tells you, quote, the world is on the threshold of the biggest famine in history, end of quotation, it's about time you listen to his quote. And he said such a famine is going to be of such massive proportions, it will affect hundreds of millions and possibly billions, meaning more than two-thirds of the population of the earth. You can't shut that out of your mind, however hard you try. But it's about time you got your hands on the booklet that shows you exactly what it all means, that is willing to admit the immensity, the enormity of the problem, but also shows you what the solution is. The peoples of this world will be allowed to survive. But only after this world has gone through the most all-consuming vortex of the most gigantic explosive wars that you could imagine in your weirdest, most disturbed nightmares and dreams. And it's about time you saw what is on the horizon and the impending portent of chaos that is stalking this earth at this moment. And it's about time you found that there is a way of escape for you and yours, and I'm not telling you need to join me or do something for my good. I'm telling you it's about time you did something for your own good. And I've got a free booklet here that shows you exactly what the Bible prophecies tell you will be occurring in the next few years. In spite of all of these gloomy predictions to the contrary, here is a booklet that shows you there is ultimate good news. That there is a broader horizon. That there is a world of peace. A world of the solution of the population explosion. A world where drought and famine will be a thing of the past. A world where war will be abolished, where worldwide universal disarmament will be absolutely enforced. A world where there will be control of space, control of science, control of space exploration. A world where there will be a complete destruction of all the stockpiled atomic and hydrogen bombs. A world of peace at last. That booklet is entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's by the title of this radio program. And you need to write for these booklets on 1975 in prophecy. And the one entitled, The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy. Write for the three booklets on prophecy, we'll know what you mean. By sending your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California, you can have these booklets absolutely free of charge with no price and no follow-up. The address is Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. They're free of charge. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.